individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on the Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to the Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight, those in the chat room and those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. And if you are listening from somewhere other than in the chat room and you'd like to come over, feel free to do so. It's para-x.com. Click on the chat now button up at the top of the page. And you'll be in with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to interact with them and interact with us and ask questions. But if you are somewhere else and you have a question, but you don't want to come to the chat room, you can do so by sending a question to theparanormalview@gmail.com and just put attention question, and we will get those answered for you. I imagine a lot of people is kind of sweltered, you might say, kind of with the heat.
What?
With the heat, yeah.
Oh, sweltered, I guess is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I hope everybody is cooling down a little bit now, at least here on the East Coast anyhow. So glad everybody is here. Hope you have a great time tonight because we got a great show lined up for you. And we got with us right now, Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
And we got Barbara Duncan.
Howdy, folks.
And a mysterious guest, you might say, that Jeff will be introducing here in a minute. However, first things first, I'm still trying to give tickets away for Mid-South. If you'd like to win a ticket, the first two people to send an email to us or just make it to the email at paranormalview@gmail.com and say I'd like a chance to win a ticket for Mid-South. The first two, though, that does that, we'll try and get you tickets for that. And all you have to do is put your name, your address, and your email. And because I don't have the tickets, they come right straight from Keith Age because he's doing the thing. But we do have the tickets to give away. So if you'd like to do that, do it. And we will get you squared away. So, Jeff, why don't you introduce our mysterious guest?
Yes, our returning guest tonight is longtime friend of the show, Kat Snyder Gash, who teams up with Henry on Paranormal View Gettysburg weekends. As a sensitive, since she was 5 years old, Kat has been experiencing the paranormal. And since then, Kat has been had experiences here and there, as well as, not surprisingly, in haunted Ireland, Scotland, and England. And her first book, My Life Amidst the Paranormal, is but a small glimpse into her experiences. So welcome back, Kat Gash.
Good afternoon, or good evening, I should say, and thank you for having me.
All over the place. We've had people in Japan, and that's already tomorrow.
Yeah.
So if we could travel that fast, it wouldn't take us too long to get to some of these faraway places in space, would it?
Nope.
I wonder, you know, they talk about the speed of light. What is the speed of sound?
What is it, 600 miles an hour? Yeah, that's Mach 1.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, radio waves. I mean, when I'm talking, you're a lot further than 600 miles over on the West Coast. So, and you're hearing me right now. So,
uh-huh.
How long does it take then for that to travel?
If we could travel that. That's the speed of electricity.
There you go. What is the speed of electricity?
I'm sure it's in there somewhere.
Now, if we could travel that fast, it wouldn't take us long at all to get some of these places.
Nope. Well, according to Einstein, you would. If you were able to move fast enough, you could indeed travel not only to distant places, but you could actually traverse through time.
That's true. And, in Jeff's neck of the woods now, Elon Musk has finished the tunnel under L.A., I think, for cars to go really, really fast.
I didn't even know he had started that. Oh, well, there hasn't been a lot of talk about it, apparently.
That's a secret.
Not much, but they were showing video of a car going through the tunnel, so it's kind of cool.
Wait till they have a wreck down there and everything jams up and the wreckers can't get to it.
Ooh. That's a scary thought.
Well, it depends if he made it the way they made the subway tunnels, which would have a lot of service shafts.
Well, it's true. But also, these things are put on pods. The cars are put on pods. It's your own car. You travel through, and it's like any rail system where the car just speeds along on these little discs.
Oh, great.
So it's, I don't know how easy it would be to wreck since you're not controlling the car.
If you're actually not steering it, you should run okay. Unless one of the rails messes up. Yeah. So tonight we're going to be talking about communicating with the dead. And I don't know why they call it communicating with the dead.
Because they're not alive?
No.
I mean, they are alive? Well, that makes it easier.
They have to be alive for you to communicate with them.
Why?
Because you're communicating with the spirit. The spirit is alive.
Well, yeah, but it's not in a body.
Doesn't say anything about a body.
Oh, okay.
So we should actually be calling it communicating with the, or should say speaking to the spirits, or with the spirits, not talking to the dead. Now you can say talking to those who have passed.
The undocumented living, I mean, maybe?
Like that. But, I mean, if they've got, you know, if they're communicating with you as real time to where they hear what you're saying and they answer you, that's not being dead. So.
Yeah, but a lot of EVPs aren't necessarily intelligent responses.
Right. So, what we're going to be talking about, and Kat's got a whole lot of stuff too. What are some of the different ways that we actually communicate with them?
I guess probably the one that's the most popular would be an audio recorder.
Yeah, an EVP. Yes.
Right.
A recorder to get EVPs. And you have some stuff on that, so why don't you just talk about that?
Well, as far as the audio is concerned, ever since the creation of the phonograph, which was by Thomas Edison, he seemed to think that there was a possibility that you'd be able to communicate with the spirit world as long as you're able to capture the voice based on a vibration and so forth, because that's pretty much all it is. When they did recordings back then, it was on like wax tubes and things, and all that was taking a sound, projecting it through a device, which we now refer to as a microphone, and that grooves and so forth to be made by a needle. And so when that would happen,
somebody is in coming in from Bonanza or something.
Oh, sorry, that was my phone again. I shut it off. What they would happen, would they put that needle on that cylinder and the vibrations would create grooves, and that groove in turn could be played back on yet a different kind of needle. And so eventually people began to hear things that generally weren't there. they couldn't quite understand it. And Thomas Edison, who was a firm believer in the spirit world, the afterlife, one of his quotes, let me see, where is it? Okay, Thomas Edison, quote, if our...
If our what? Did you...
Did you fall off?
I don't think so.
Hold on. No, here we go. Sorry. If a person's services after death, then it is strictly logical and scientific to assume that it retains memory, intellect, all faculties, and knowledge that we have acquire here on Earth. Therefore, if we can evolve and... he says evolve. I don't understand why he said evolve. Evolve an instrument so delicate as to be affected by our personality and its services in the next life. Such an instrument would be made available to record something. Yeah, to record something. So pretty much what he was saying is that he agreed that our existence doesn't end just because our physical body ends, that our essence continues in a memory and its intellect and so forth, and therefore we should be able to find a way to communicate in the afterworld. And as per his devices, if human speech can cause the vibrations to be recorded on a cylinder, why couldn't the people in the afterlife do the same thing in some manner? And supposedly he did develop such a machine, or at least he had the blueprints for it. Some people seem to think that he developed it privately, but he never showed it because a lot of people just told him he was, you know, a little on the bonkers side. So he kept it quiet. And yet now a lot of people firmly believe that he did indeed do that. And so even though a lot of people really think that Thomas Edison did indeed record a few things, he never documented it. He never fully said so. But the EVPs, I mentioned it to you earlier, and Jeffrey picked it up also. In the 1930s, a gentleman by the name of Von Sasley, with photographs and also phonographs with wire recordings instead of the cylinder, he actually did it with a wire phonograph. And all the way up until the 50s, he supposedly had a lot of results. And he published in one of the books for the American Society for Psychical Research. And then in the 1940s, the first verifiable voice was gotten by a reverend when he was testing a well-known medium at the time. Supposedly, he was getting voices overdubbed. Then what we now know as electronic voice phenomena was coined by Dr. Konstantin Rodive. And he supposedly did thousands of recordings. A lot of people didn't think that he was quite legitimate, and a number of his tapes went missing for quite a number of years. But if it were not for Rodive, we would not have the term EVP today. Most think that it's a modern term, but it is not. It was actually coined back in the 1960s.
All right. Did you drop off or was you done?
Oh, sorry. I thought I talked long enough. There we go.
Well, I didn't know. It was just kind of like all of a sudden dead air, and I didn't know if you fell off or if you hit
Yeah, we have some guests who you kind of know when they're done talking, and other people, they should say over.
Oh. You know, okay, yeah. I'll say over and out.
So, Barbara, did you have something else on that?
Well, I was looking up Edison's ghost machine. It doesn't.
I was trying to just find that quote.
It doesn't look like he actually finished anything. But he did try. He was looking at Houdini and trying to find ways that would satisfy Houdini's conditions.
Yeah, Houdini was the James Randi of his day.
Yeah.
And there are people.
Oh, yeah. He was what I call him a skeptical believer. You know, he wasn't a full believer in the afterlife, but at the same time, he did say that if anybody came forward with something that he couldn't
disprove,
then he might be all for it. But unfortunately, nobody ever did. And he ended up debunking so many different mediums that were charlatans. You know, they were taking advantage of people.
Oh,
they
were
scamming people out of money right and left. And he didn't like it. He thought that was cruel and mean. And so he went about making sure that all these people got their just due when he exposed them. And unfortunately, that's what caused the downfall of the friendship between he and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Because Conan Doyle was a firm believer in all of these mediums.
Oh, yeah. And he even fell for the fairies.
Oh, yeah. So when he and Houdini got into it about Houdini making it a point to go about telling people what charlatans most of these people were, Doyle finally just had to throw up his hands and say, look, you know, we just need to agree to disagree, but as far as I'm concerned, our friendship is over with. And it's kind of a shame.
That's not how you agree to disagree, actually. I think it's more like we're just going to disagree you.
Yeah. Cut it off. Yeah.
Stage magician you. Although I've always found it interesting that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote, Sherlock Holmes, was such a believer in something intangible like that.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. He was a contradiction. He looked at so much scientific ways and means of proving or disproving things, and yet when it came to the paranormal, the supernatural, he just blindly accepted it. Mm. And it really didn't make any sense. Total contradiction of personality.
Well, I've got my Sun, Moon, Mercury, and Venus all in Taurus. I'm amazed I'm as much into metaphysics and such that I am, because obviously astrology, because that's very much a grounded Earth sign. You would think I'd be far more. I mean, I don't fall for everything. I mean, I don't immediately jump to, oh, it's a ghost, and I certainly don't go, oh, it must be a demon, which so many bad ghost hunting groups do. But when I'm in at a ghost hunt and I hear a ka-thunk, the first thing I do is I head towards it while everyone else that I tend to be with are freaking out. I'm like, yeah, but I want to know what made that noise.
Oh yeah, I immediately go running for the noise. Mm. I mean, that's the first thing that I want to know is, okay, what did that? You know, was it somebody's pet?
Yeah, really.
You know.
If it's in
exactly.
I'm walking. I'm not running.
We also have to remember that Doyle was part of the Golden Dawn, which was a hermetic order, and they did have a lot of rational thought in there. I mean, certainly the Kabbalah, certainly parts of hermeticism are quite based in science. So, yeah, I am not surprised that Doyle would have picked it up. Most of the elite in England, a lot of the elite in England were part of the Golden Dawn.
Hans Holzer was a Golden Dawn.
Was he?
I'm not sure about Alexandria, but Hans certainly was, I found out.
Huh.
Well, I'm not either one, so.
What?
I'm not either one of them.
Either? Oh, not one of them. Okay, I thought you said either of them. I was wondering what the choice was.
No, I'm just me.
And you're just fine, Henry.
I don't know. Some people won't say that. So EVPs is kind of like, you might say, the main thing that a lot of people look for. Whereas a lot of people puts their, I won't say faith or trust, but they tend to like to play with a lot of the toys other than actually getting voice phenomena. For instance, a K2 meter. That come out, I guess, when the ghost hunting pretty much started with ghost hunters.
Yeah, but the K2 meeting wasn't designed for ghost hunting. It was just ended up being used by ghost hunters. It essentially was to check for wiring issues.
Right, right. But they'll put it down, and if a light comes on, they're hollering, oh, there's something here, there's something here. When, like you said, that could be picking up electromagnetic stuff from anywhere. And
yeah, but if it's sitting in the middle of a cement floor and nobody's near it, and suddenly it seems to be responding to specific questions.
Should I let you in on a secret?
Oh, here we go. Okay. Oh, it's been you all the time? You've been going to all these investigators and you're the one? Oh, no. No.
Well, yeah. Now I know.
Yep.
I'm going to look behind the doors now. Is Henry over there?
Henry,
No, if a lot of people has their phones and it's not, they might turn the ringtone down or put it on silence or whatever, but that thing is communicating with the tower. And anytime it spikes from the tower, it can set off one of those K2 meters and make the lights blink.
Yes, it can.
So it comes from a lot of other areas. I mean, you can have it sitting in the middle of the concrete floor if you want, just like what you said. Yeah. But somebody around, or anything like that, he'll pick up an electric pulse like that, and it'll go off, and everybody starts hollering, oh, it's something, blah, blah, blah. No, not, doesn't necessarily has to be a spirit. Why do they think that a spirit gives off an energy like that to set like a K2 meter off?
Because it's been theorized that our what causes our bodies to be alive is organic energy of some sort, and that's most likely maybe what our consciousness / quote soul unquote is. So a lot of people think it's the soul that's being picked up, because that's why a lot of times you'll get temperature changes when you and I've actually done that. I was on a residential investigation, and they were homing in on with their K2 meters from different directions. And it was like somebody standing right here. And I put my hand through it, and it was like there was a column of cold, almost crackling energy. And I was like, all right, that's something I've never experienced before.
Okay, to throw a monkey in the wrench here, though. And that is, as a living being, we also have that same bioelectrical, if not more bioelectrical energy, which means we're going to be setting off those K2 meters as well. If you can, set off that EMF meter or set off that. Some people can. Some people are really good at directing their energy levels, like martial artists, Kung Fu people, you know, directed chi. And if you can do that, fine. But normally, I don't know how many people can do that. Whereas a spirit, I don't know whether they're going to automatically become, they know Kung Fu, and can set off those.
another big one.
And set off the meter by directed energy. Who knows? But I'm really suspicious of K2s. And EMF. I mean, they're great if you want to test for EMF, if people are getting headaches or are afraid of a certain area to see if there's a high EMF. But outside of that, I'm just not convinced that an EMF or a K2 meter does much.
Well, I have a question for you, Barbara. What if you're standing in the middle of a field somewhere and there's just you and one other person, and your phones are either turned completely off or they're left in your bag somewhere, so you don't even have your phones on you, and you're standing in the middle of the field with nobody else around you, a phone signal will only go just so far. So it's definitely set off by people's cell phones and other things if you're close enough. But if you're out there in that field with nobody else around you and you have no phones with you, and that either the K2 meter or an EMF detector or even a REM pod are going off in response, direct response to questions, how do you
explain
that? Well,
you see, that I would have a little bit more confidence in, as opposed to something indoors where there's a high electrical interference. Now, again, outside, you don't know. Is there a plane overhead? Is there a repeater cell tower close by? Are there underground cables? Does somebody out there have a CB radio that they are playing around with? Are there ham radio operators around? There's a lot of different ways that you can mess around with those K2 and EMF meters. Even a tri-field meter has a, because there is natural radiating EMF. So you possibly could be connecting with that as well. You know, right before an earthquake, you get those lights in the sky, which is a lot of bioelectrical or a lot of electrical energy. So it is possible to pick up on natural magnetic or geomagnetic energy as well. But yeah, and you're right. I agree that that's a good test of the EMF as a indicator for spirit.
Meanwhile, you're out in the middle of nowhere saying, is anyone here? And
the better one
nothing.
Would be to try that in a Faraday cage.
How many people have those, though? Oh. Everybody's got one.
Well,
in their
everybody
basement.
Has one as far as a microwave goes, because a microwave is a Faraday.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to stick
no,
my
don't stick your head in the microwave. No.
Well, what about maybe heat lightning or something like that? That sets off electric charges, too.
Yeah, but I think you would be able to see the correlation between the lightning and the blips on the meters, though.
Well, how far can the electrical charge from lightning travel? I mean,
You can feel it. When you're out somewhere and there's lightning, especially when it's real close, you can feel it. I mean, I know I can.
That's what I'm saying. If it's far away, how far will that electric charge, not necessarily the lightning bolt itself, but the electric charge, how far will that travel? I mean, lightning could be very far off and you might not even see it behind a hill or something.
Wow, you're getting into physics there.
Hey, I'm just throwing.
Wow, that's deep.
But anyway.
That's a valid question, though. I never really considered the possibility of that, because there was a time that I was on an investigation along with Pat and someone else. And right in the middle of the investigation, there was a tremendous thunderstorm. I mean, I'm talking about the kind of thunderstorm where the lightning was directly overhead and it was a simultaneous flash boom type of thing. And we were getting some of the most amazing responses on Spirit Box, and an EMF detector was going off in the same manner as the responses on the Spirit Box. And some of the EVPs that we got simultaneously on recorders that were literally in different parts of the building that we had set up and left there because there's activities in different places. We had set them up in different locations just in the event that something was happening when we weren't around. And when we played them all back, almost at the same time that this storm was going off, because of that electrical energy, everything was going off. And it was just amazing. And what we got that night was just incredible. And the fact that they were responses to questions, they weren't just random stuff. They were responses to questions. And a few of those recorders that were in different areas actually picked up and answered questions that we were talking about on another level. You know, they could hear us somehow and they answered on another recorder. So by paranormal groups and paranormal investigators saying, oh, we'd love it when there's a storm, you know, when there's a lot of ozone in the air, when there's electrical energy and so forth, it ramps up activity. Boy, did it prove it that night. And if anybody wants to know, ask Pat. He will definitely tell you that it was an incredible evening. So that might be the truth. Some of those gadgets will go off as a result, but it's also the fact that it has been pretty much correlated, the amount of activity that happens at the same time as a thunderstorm. So
that always helps to raise your own Frankenstein monster, but you know.
True.
Okay. I got a whole lot of other stuff like that we're going to be talking about. I think what we'll do, though, because it's almost time, I think we're going to take about a 2, maybe 3 minute tops break because we got a lot to talk about. So I'm not going to play a lot of commercials. So what we'll do is we'll take a quick break. Is there anything, Barbara or Pat or Jeff, you want to say before we go into break?
I didn't even realize who's ready for time for a break. It's
yeah,
kind of move. One of those shows is moving right along.
Yeah. So, all right. Jeff, won't you take us out? I'll bring us back and we'll be back shortly.
Right, you're listening to the Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's returning guest, Cat. Let me know when you're done there. Tonight's guest, Cat Snyder Gash. So stay tuned for more Paranormal View after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walk-In Tour.
Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world,
having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
So, Tim, around here at Para X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, little sis. No, not the Who, the Shock.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your choice.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. Everybody is enjoying the show. We have with us Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
Barbara Duncan.
Still here.
And Kat Gash.
How you doing?
And speaking of everybody, where do we have listeners at tonight?
Henry, tonight they're coming in from the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada.
Barbara.
Helps if you unmute the mic. They're coming in from the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, unknown, and Vietnam.
Vietnam? Wow, that's good. Huh.
Pretty cool.
Yes, it is. So we're glad, and glad everybody is listening. Hope you're enjoying the show. So with that, we've been talking tonight about communicating with spirits, and some people say communicating with the dead, but I say they're alive. We got one here called the Spirit Box. Now, there's all kinds of different spirit boxes and stuff. I know that it runs through a lot of radio stations when you ask a question, and it'll throw out a word or something like that. How reliable do you think those are?
Me personally, I have had some incredible sessions with a spirit box, because when you consider how fast those stations go through, there's really very little possibility that an entire sentence can be spoken just because of the amount of stations that it goes through. So when you're listening to it, especially if you've got it on the slowest speed, you might hear, you know, a half a word or a partial word or a little bit of a song, something like that. But then if you've got it on the fastest speed, pretty much all you're going to get is either a shushing sound or an ear type of thing. So if you actually get an entire word or three words together that make up a sentence or a statement, that is almost impossible for that to do. So when that happens and you get responses from a question that you've asked, and that comes through like that, you know, you've got to look at it saying, wow, you know, it's almost virtually impossible for this particular instrument to do that. So there are an awful lot of those spirit boxes. It depends on what model you have, because goodness knows they've been making so many. Depending on which model that you have, some of them work at such a low speed that it is possible for you to misunderstand or misinterpret something, because it's what you want to hear. But if you get a good one and it's, you know, going through the stations at a fast pace, no, I do place a certain amount of stock in it, because I've had some incredible things to come through. I've had my name spoken. Another few questions that I've asked about myself, and they've come through answering it. I've asked the names of people that are with me, and they actually say them, especially if they're names that are more than one syllable. And I don't really know how it happens. The theories are that because the voice that we use in life is actually just vibration from our vocal cord, from our voice box. And after we pass, we have to be able to use a different kind of vibration in order to manipulate sound. And that frequency is actually a sound wave that's coming through somehow or another to be able to manipulate that sound wave and using those sound waves to talk through it. They call it white noise. Well, to me, the spirit box doesn't really have what you call white noise. It's a lot of repetitious noise from the stations. White noise is a different thing altogether. Like when you turn on a television set a long time ago, after the stations would go off the air and they would play the Star Spangled Banner, and then suddenly it would sit there and either go boop or it would sit there going shh, the same way it did in Poltergeist. Now that's white noise. So to call the spirit box white noise, no, I don't think so. But me personally, there have been times, yeah, it's come through with no problem at all. So I don't know what other people think about it, but me, yeah, it works.
Well, when I hear a spirit box, especially live, it sounds like all the hissing, and there may be a skip, sort of like and people will say, oh, well, obviously they're reciting the Gettysburg Address. And I'm like, how do you hear that? I don't get anything from that. So I've never been able to. It's just pointless to me. I've never used a spirit box, and I have no plans ever to do so, because it is literally, to me, it is just sound like white noise. It may not be white noise. It just sounds like white noise.
Yeah, if once you have a voice recorder, it's really good to record your spirit box sessions, because you can be sitting there asking questions and it will sound like they're answering your questions. And maybe it's wishful thinking on some people's part. But then after you go back and you listen to your audio and you realize that isn't what they said. It doesn't sound anything like what they think it said, because the voice recorder doesn't lie. Human ears will lie because not everybody hears the same thing. Let's face it, you can be in a room filled with people listening to somebody lecture, and you'll think that they said a certain word or a certain phrase, and you'll repeat it to the person next to you, and they'll say, that isn't what they said. So you're like, okay, well, did I misinterpret it? You know, do I have tinnitus? Am I going deaf? Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. The spirit box is the same way. So you really shouldn't take it at face value when you're first listening to it. But once you listen to it again through your audio review, if it does indeed say exactly what you think it said through the voice recorder, now, that's a little different. So, yeah, I agree with you. You can misinterpret a voice box or a spirit box with no problem at all because of wishful thinking.
Well, that goes back to the Yanni or Laurel argument.
I was just going to say that.
The argument is that people can hear at different frequencies. So if you hear Yanni, you're perception level is at one frequency. If you hear Laurel, it's at another. Not everybody hears in the same spectrum. People hear things differently.
But have you heard the videos where they change the pitch and the speed of the file, and on one side you do hear Laurel and the other Yanni? And I always heard more like a Lonnie than a Laurel.
Mm.
It's how again. You hear. And if you have an ear infection, and it's also what do you expect to hear? Your brain also, even though somebody can be quite articulate, you're still going to hear what you want to, because that's how your brain wants.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
Okay. How about the Ouija board?
How about the Ouija board?
How many people... Yeah.
How many people... Thanks for a great serving tray.
Faith in that.
Of course, the drinks all keep moving around. And.
I haven't used one since I was in junior high school. And that was only as a joke, and I haven't touched one since. It's not that I'm afraid of them or anything. I just have never had any notion to do it.
Was that in between Bloody Mary dares?
No, that was after The Exorcist.
Oh, there you go. Oh, there's a good... Hey, let's do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody should get one now.
Parker Brothers, right? Was it Parker Brothers that put it out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, they've got the really frilly pink
Hello Kitty.
The Hello Kitty Ouija board and baby's first Ouija board and all that.
I was in Gettysburg last month at a lecture seminar with Reverend Tim Shaw.
Yay.
And he was talking about various different ways and means of communicating, but the three main ones were dowsing rods, pendulums, and Ouija boards. Now, I didn't go to the second night that had to do with Ouija boards, but while I was there the night for the dowsing rods and the pendulums, the place where he was staying, the one general manager came walking in and handed him a Ouija board. Now, he's a collector of all kinds of Ouija boards. And she handed him this Ouija board, and she said that someone who had stayed there had left it underneath the bed. And they never bothered to call and find out if it was found or anything. So they kept it in the lost and found for a long time. And then finally they decided, I don't want this thing here in this building. I just really don't want it here. So remembering that Tim was coming to stay there, she handed it to him, and his face lit up like a kid that had just gotten a brand new bike, because it was a glow in the dark.
Oh, those are great.
And he was, his mouth dropped open, big grin all over his face, and he said, you know something? I have the planchet for it, but I haven't been able to find one of these. So it was so opportune that she found this thing and decided to hold on to it knowing that he was coming.
Yeah.
But, he went on to say just briefly that night that, Ouija boards are not what everybody expects, but they can be used just like anything else to open the veil. Anything can be used to open the veil to the spirit world. It's just how you use it. But, I've never made the attempt. Maybe it had to do with The Exorcist. I don't know. I guess I was a wuss. I just, no, after that, forget it. Not
now,
happening.
I'm a huge horror film fan. And they made, of course, since they were making a bunch of movies based on board games, and since theoretically they decided that Ouija is a board game, because it's a board, I guess. Somebody dragging across the floor? What are you... one of the things they indicated was the little round hole in the planchette. Apparently, if you look through that, you can see the ghost. I'm like, I don't really think that's a thing.
No.
I was like, I think you're adding that.
But the best meme ever out there right now is somebody just took a photograph of two priests.
The subway?
And they were at the stair steps of the Exorcist house taking photographs of them, one of them lying down on the ground like he'd been tossed out the window. And they were taking photographs of themselves doing that. I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, selfies?
Yeah, like selfies of them, like Damien Karras was at the end, at the base of the stairs, on the ground. It's awesome.
So, how many people does it take to operate a Ouija board? Two?
One to two, or three, or four, or many can fit around and stick their hand in.
Touching the planchette. See, now, if they make a Ouija board and put the planchette there and ask a question and let it go by itself, I might tend to believe that a little bit more than 15 hands on something.
And you know you're in a movie.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people that claim it's autonomic response. And it's just people moving it themselves.
Yeah, a subconscious means of you know, answering the questions. Yeah.
Okay, you talked about dowsing rods. Dowsing rods are okay. A lot of people use those. The only thing I have about dowsing rods is when you're holding them out there, if your hands or wrists just bend a little bit, them rods is going to move one way or the other. So there's always the chance that it's human error instead of a spirit doing it.
Don't move your arms.
It's awful.
It depends on the type of rods you use. There are some that are on dowels that it doesn't matter how you hold your hands. The rods are independent of the dowel. So.
Yes. Those are the kind that I use.
So those probably work a little bit better. You was talking about using crystals. A lot of people use those. Again, holding that wrist real still. If you had to stand and you just set it on there and you ask a question and watch it start moving without anybody touching anything, I can believe that more.
You mean a pendulum, not a crystal.
Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, a pendulum. Yeah.
I've been trying to find, I have a meme that I like and I say occasionally share on Twitter where it literally, it's a sign outside a Subway restaurant saying, do not bring your Ouija boards in here. You know, go haunt your own house. And the person captioned it saying, what the heck happened at Subway?
My goodness. The spirit of a ham and cheese sub. Oh, my God.
That also brings us over to mediums and psychics. They communicate with spirits. And I'm not one, so I don't talk to them that way. That's why I only use an EVP meter, I mean a recorder. Anybody who is one, they're sitting there telling you there's somebody here, they're saying this or doing it. I just have to go with what they're saying. I mean, I have no verification on it.
Well, you've indicated on numerous occasions that somebody was talking about a little girl or something, and you got an EVP at the same time from the little girl.
That is verification then.
Yes. There you go.
On a recorder, yes.
That happens to me quite often, even though I don't consider myself a medium. I jokingly say, I'm not a medium, I'm a small. Ditto. But I consider myself just a sensitive. But when it comes to all the gadgets that we've already mentioned, there have been many times when I've gone to a location, especially the past year since I've been with a particular group out of Mont Alto, Pennsylvania, called the Ghost Pit. When we go to a location, I can pick up on whatever might be there. Doesn't make any difference, you know, what the location is. And generally, what I really like about the team leader is that when we go to a place for the first time, that I personally have never been to, generally he will not even tell me where we're going. He won't even tell me what city we're going to, whether it's a private residence or a business or something like that. He will not tell me what is there. He won't tell me the history or anything. So I'll go in blind. And when I start picking up something and I let him know, it's really a validation for me when I find out that what I'm picking up on is what has either been happening at the location or the owner, manager, or whatever has been experiencing. And for me, the way I do things as a sensitive, I do have an occasion to use my dowsing rods. I've learned to use them very well. And I will pick up on certain things. I will also use my dowsing rod, which I haven't used that often, but I'm beginning to use it now. But another gadget that is used nowadays, and people have seen this on Ghost Adventures, the machine that is known as an SLS unit or an RCAM, it's based on the Kinect video. It has the little stick figures. Now, originally, when I first saw this on Ghost Adventures, I was thinking, you know, this is horse hockey. You know, this is really ridiculous because it could pick up almost anything. And you didn't know, looking at a television, whether or not it had been manipulated. So I didn't really place a whole lot of stock in it. Well, after I started working with this group, one of the particular pieces of equipment that we use is the SLS ArcCam unit. And it was absolutely amazing and very much validation for me that when I would go to particular locations and I would pick up on something and I would say, okay, well, there's a man over there, there's a boy over there, there's a woman over here. And whoever was using that ArcCam unit would point it in the direction where I was telling them, and ta-da, there it was. I mean, there's no human, no live human standing there, but yet there is. And we've interacted with them, you know, ask them, well, you know, hey, we can see you. And I'll say, well, you know, can you lift your hand and wave to us? And the stick figure will wave. And one of the most profound things that ever happened was that we were at a location and another member picked up on the same thing that I did, where there was an injured person and they were not able to stand. And the ArcCam picked up this person laying there or sitting there kneeling, and she reached out her hand and that stick figure reached out his hand to her and was trying to stand up. And I knew what this person was doing. I could feel it. I've sensed them before. And when I went back and looked at the ArcCam footage of the other member doing this, I broke down and cried because it was so moving, because you could literally see this figure, this spirit that I knew was injured and sick, trying to stand because she put out her hand to it. So there are some things that I don't place a whole lot of stock in, but in all honesty, I trust the team members explicitly. It validates a great deal of what happens to me personally as a sensitive to see some of these things happen on this ArcCam. It's an absolutely amazing piece of equipment, and if it's done properly and with a certain amount of skepticism, it can work. I still am not sure what principle it works off of, but it does pick up the figures, and it's just incredible. So if any of you get an opportunity to work with it, please do. Please do. I think you will be amazed.
Oh, I've seen the videos, and they're awesome and very almost a little creepy to watch.
Yes.
And I've always wanted to play with those.
Well, do it. Do it, Jeff. They're just, like I said, they're validating, because once you pick up on something and you know that it's there and you can interact with them, you know, ask them to come over and touch you or ask them to sit down next to someone, and they do. Probably the saddest thing that I ever picked up on with the ArcCam, we were at a location where I knew that somebody was hiding in somebody's basement. And they were scared to death. And I told our team leader, Brian, you know, you might want to go in there with the ArcCam because there's somebody in there that is absolutely scared. You know, you might want to try and pick it up. Well, sure enough, he walked in there, turned on the R cam to this one section, and you could literally see this figure trying to climb up this mound of debris and everything, trying to get away from us because he was so scared. And it was just incredible. And it was moving because I knew he was there. Brian didn't know. He's not as sensitive, but he picked it up on the R cam. So it was validation for me. It just gives me chills.
All right. You got anything to add, Jeff or Barb?
I was just going to ask, do they set that thing up and let it run independently of anybody being in the room?
Okay. Oh, they have. They've definitely
and
done that.
Have they gotten a response from it that way?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've definitely walked out of the room, left it sitting there, come back and looked at it. Sure enough, around. Somebody's walking around or doing something.
Cool. I wonder how that would work if you actually saw a mist or something, whether or not the Kinect would show stick figures on top of that mist.
Huh.
You know, I like what Waverly and people keep saying they see that little creeper. Whether or not you could be able to show that Kinect and have it move with the creeper.
Okay. Well, the creepers, I know that there's one at Trans-Allegheny as well. And I don't know if anybody has tried to use the SLS on a creeper. That would be an interesting way to do it. Huh. Because nobody's really sure what the creeper is. Nobody's really sure what shadow people are. So I don't know if that would pick up either one of them.
Yeah, because it's already manifesting itself. So it's interesting to see if it picks up on top of the manifestation. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Hmm.
Cool experiment.
So, Barbara, Jeff, you guys got any other devices that you want to talk about that communicate?
Well, when I have one accessible, I usually just use a digital recorder.
Well, yeah.
Just saying.
When you have one accessible, huh?
Well, yeah, I don't know where mine is right now.
Oh. Barbara?
Automatic writing.
Ah, now there's another one.
Nope.
So do you lay
use it anymore? Very few.
What do you just lay the pen down and say, right?
No. You put the pen and paper in your hand, and then you start drawing circles, and then something takes over, and you start writing.
Yeah. Really? Have you done that?
Yeah, I've tried it. Walked in on somebody in the morgue once who was trying it there, and I'm going, you really think that's a good idea?
Yeah. That's kind of creepy. I actually had that happen to me once, not in a morgue, but I did have an automatic writing. Henry, you were a witness to one of the things that happened to me. When we were at Antietam, we had gone to this one section called the North Woods. Pat had asked all of us to, you know, kind of take a tour of the area. Something had happened to me years before where somebody came through and I started writing, and I didn't even realize I was doing it. And it wrote down the name of Patterson. And I just kind of saw this Union soldier on horseback, and he was sad, and he was overlooking the remains of horses and some last minute dead, and there were civilians picking over things, and I could feel his anguish, I could feel his hurt and everything else, and I didn't know who he was. I had no clue. I didn't know where it was. I didn't know what time frame it was. Nothing. And just prior to us going down to Antietam, and Henry was there, Pat, Kat, and a few others, And I came onto that road, and I knew exactly what that was. And I realized who that was. And I talked to Pat earlier and found out that Patterson had indeed been a commander of the Union Army during the Battle at Antietam. And they were in that area. And I didn't know it until we got down there that that particular Patterson had missed the battle by one day. He had been wounded in another battle, and he had just arrived back with his troops the day before that battle. And he was unable to go with them into battle. And he wrote a letter to his wife saying that because he was not there with his men on that day, he felt responsible for that many deaths because he was not there to command. So he had taken a ride on his horse to overlook the battlefield after the battle. And why he chose me to project this, I don't know. But then Pat also pointed out to me at the top of that hill a monument to Patterson's regiment. And I just got so emotional that I was shaking and wanted to cry. And Kat Cloco came over to me and she says, Kat, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not. And she actually had to take me by, you know, and move me away, so that I wouldn't be so emotional. It was incredible. I have no idea why he chose me to write his name, about his uniform, the kind of hat he was wearing. It was an amazing experience. So anybody that goes through it, it's just incredible.
Now that was over by the farmhouse or over by the church?
It was on the opposite end. After you pass the Dunker Church, when we went up to that one, where you ended up telling everybody you wanted to just stay put and we'd send a car back for you.
That's over there. Was that, right? Yeah. Was that the cornfield?
It was just on the other side of it. Yeah, because we made you walk all the way around that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I didn't know they had Ubers out in the middle of the battlefield there.
Well, we were joking and telling Henry, well, just stay put. We'll bring the car around some way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I was hoping for. Anyway, I got one before we go to a break. And if you want to try it, you're welcome to do it. If you take a candle and light a candle and sit there and ask it a question and say, you know, like if the answer is yes, make the flame grow tall. If it's no, make the flame grow short. That flame will either grow tall or it'll grow short. Or if there's no answer at all, it won't move. So you can try that. It works. I've seen it.
As long as you're not farting.
I don't do like you, Jeff.
We're not talking about vaporous anomalies here.
Wrong kind of vapors.
All right. When we come back, because it's not break time. When we come back from break, we're going to be going the other way. Instead of how we communicate with the spirits, we're going to be talking about how the spirits communicate with us.
Poking at you.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things. So anyway, we're going to talk about that. So we'll do another little quick one. So, Jeff, if you want to take us.
Yep. Yep, you're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest, Kat Snyder Gass. So stay tuned for the rest of The Paranormal View after the break.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy-metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship.com. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I, what shall I do?
Frankly, my dear.
Line!
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio, programming for the open mind.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for tuning in with us tonight. Hope you're enjoying the show. And we have with us Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
Barbara Duncan. And Kat Gash.
How are you doing?
And, of course, we want to thank Kat for taking time to be with us tonight. I never asked. I hope the sound is good in the chat room. I know my commercials that I've been playing for some reason has really been low, and I've tried to figure out why all of a sudden those are really playing low. So I'm going to have to tear everything apart, I guess, and see what the problem is and see if I can get that fixed. But tonight we have been talking about communicating with some people say the dead. I say with the spirits because they're alive. But anyway, so how do they communicate to us? Now, there's all kinds of different things that spirits do to let us know that they're here. And I'm going to let Kat Gash talk to us for a few minutes because she was telling me something that I want to find more out about or find out more about it is she was getting phone calls.
Oh, yeah. That's probably one of the rarest forms of communication that I've ever heard of. By the time that I started really delving into my experiences and trying to find answers for what was going on with me, I was in my teens. I mean, I started looking into things when I was like 10 or 11, but by the time I got into my teens, and there were so many different books out, and you had books from anyone from Eric von Daniken about aliens to Hans Holzer about ghosts, but there were also a number of amateur books out there about different ways that spirits can communicate with you. And it turns out that voice recorders or rail-to-rail tape recorders back then it was cassettes, and now it's digital recorders. And then also photographs, any other form at that period of time. Nobody really realized that because things like wireless telegraph and telephones, because they have an electrical pulse to them, that that was a possibility that the spirit world could use that as well. Nobody really thought about it. Thomas Edison himself said that he thought perhaps not just, you know, on the telephone. Now, we referred to them as a party line when I was growing up, because you could be talking to somebody and then suddenly you hear somebody else's conversation going on because you had to, you know, have a telephone along with somebody else. But back then, you had to be connected by a switchboard or something like that. So it was virtually impossible for you to have somebody else on the line with you. But you could hear voices on the telephone when people were talking, and they would be voices of people that you would recognize. So he also, Edison, I mean, also realized, well, that is a possibility, that you could hear the voices of the dead through the telephone. But at the time, you had no way of recording it. Now, eventually, you were able to hook up a recorder to the telephone, you know, for your messages. And that would happen quite often, where people would play back their recorders for their voice messages. And they would hear voices that they knew were familiar from people that had passed. And so they realized, well, that is indeed happening. Well, many years ago, after my father passed away, my mother and my sister and I devised a means of communicating with each other to let each other know it was us. So if there was an emergency, we would know that it was us and we needed to pick up the phone. Because, you know, back then you didn't have the option of not picking up the phone. You could let the recorder pick it up. But if you wanted to know who it was, you picked it up and said hello. So we decided to say, if it's one of us, we're going to call the other. We're going to ring two times, wait 30 seconds, and then call back. And that way, we would know that it was, you know, one of us. And that's exactly the way we did things for the longest time. Well, after my mother passed away, and I didn't realize it, my mother passed away sometime during the night, and my sister was supposed to go into the hospital that following day for something, and she thought it was very odd that my mother had not called her to wish her well. And I was sitting in my living room watching TV, and it was just before Christmas, and I was looking at my tree, and I was thinking of my mother. Well, my phone rang twice, but then it didn't call back. And I thought, well, this is kind of weird. So I didn't think anything more of it. I thought, well, geez, you know, somebody started to call, realized that it was a wrong number, and hung up. Well, 4 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call from an uncle, her brother, saying that my mother had passed away sometime during the night. And by the time I got there and my sister got there, she had been gone for a few hours, probably passed away sometime like 10 o'clock that night. So when I got my phone call that two rings, it was at 11 o'clock. And my mother was already gone. So there was no way that my mother could have called. And a few times after my mother had passed away, my phone would ring twice. And I would wait for the call to come through again, and nobody did. Finally, it rang twice. 30 seconds, it rang again, and I picked it up, and I said, hello, and I thought it was my sister or my niece, who was old enough to be making her own phone calls and everything. And I picked it up, and I said, hey, how are you doing? And I didn't hear anything. And then all of a sudden, I hear something that sounded like they were at a great distance. And I could hear what I thought was my mom's voice in the distance. And it startled me, and I said, Mom, is that you? And then the line went dead. Well, a couple of days later, it happened again. And this time, I heard it even closer. So I called my sister, and I said, you know, I'm getting some strange phone calls. And she says, so am I. And she said, that's the oddest thing, because she and I were both getting phone calls within a few moments of each other. We started keeping track of the times. And she kept telling me that every time she picked it up, she honestly thought my mom was on the other end of the line. And so did I. So it happened a number of times after that, and then eventually it stopped. Well, then after my sister passed away a few years later, the same thing happened again. The two rings, 30 seconds, calling back. And it was just the strangest feeling, knowing full well that my loved ones were still trying to communicate with me through the phone in a manner that they knew I would identify with. And even to this day, it still gives me chills to remember that this happened. And nobody else in the family, it was just us, that knew that code. So for that to happen, yeah. So I firmly believe, yeah, they can use any kind of means whatsoever, even if it's a telephone, to try and communicate.
So do you still get calls?
No, I haven't gotten one in years. I don't know if it's because I've changed phone numbers a couple of times. That's probably it more than anything else. You know, my mother's like, damn it, she's changed her phone number. I can't call her anymore. I don't know.
Much more like new ghost, who dis?
Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, they would have the knowledge to know that you changed numbers, and they'd probably know what it is. So
I'm sure.
I'm also probably sure that they understand and know that you know that they were thinking about you.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been communicated with by, you know, different members of my family through other means, but, you know, electronically, no. In no other fashion, just the phone.
Were these rotary phones or touchdown?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, so rotary, push button, you know.
Star 69 or anything. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The wall phone type of things. Ever since we went cell phones, no. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, at least they weren't trying to call you to collect.
It kind of makes you wonder, though.
I would have accepted the call.
If means like Skype or chat or some other means along those lines, they're going to try that.
Yeah. Now, my mother was totally electronically challenged, so it's rather doubtful that she would try and communicate through a computer or anything like that, but I don't know about my sister. You know, it's hard to tell.
Well, there are other ways that they do try and let us know or communicate with us, let us know that they're still watching us or around us. I think some people finds coins all the time.
Yep, that's me.
Is that you?
Yeah, that's my dad.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Oh, it's that term, pennies from heaven, where you find the pennies.
Well, when he was alive, Dad always tended to walk a couple of paces behind Mom and my brother and me because he would pick up coins that somehow we didn't see. We would just walk over them, and he would like be picking up coins. So the night he passed, we were at the hospital, and I have this all written up on my paranormal page because there's a lot more metaphysical aspects to the story, but cutting it short is when the doctor came back in and said, no, he's expired. I was sitting down and the doctor left, and my brother gets up, walks over to me, and leans over, and between Penny, which my mother, that's what brought on the waterworks, where she's like, oh my God, it's Robert's Penny. And from then on, my brother and I find pennies, nickels, quarters. I found dollar bills skittering down the street. And whenever I pick up a coin out loud, without caring if anybody hears me, I always say, hi, Dad. And there are times I'll find several in a day, not just, you know, one now and then, you know, so.
Mm.
Found like eight like the other night, just sitting there. I'm like, okay, hi, Dad, how you doing?
That's a nice feeling, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah.
And there's times like a loved one may have worn a certain cologne, and there might be times when all of a sudden you feel like somebody's around, you get a whiff of it.
Uh-huh.
You just know that they're around.
As a matter of fact, I think the person that put that in the chat room, kid, as a guest, I think I know who that is.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Who did you think it is?
If I'm not mistaken, that's my niece, Laura.
Oh, well, good. I'm sure she'll let you know.
I'm sure. Because she told me she was going to try and tune in. Well, by the way, everybody at the Ghost Pit, hi!
How many people are in the chat room from the Ghost Pit right now?
I don't know. They just put it generically. Okay. Oh, yeah. The kid says, yep, that's her. How you doing, kid?
I'm doubting that's on her birth certificate.
No. That's what I've called her ever since she was, you know, just before she even got out of diapers. I've always called her the kid.
Now, there's also times when things happen that all of a sudden, you know, you just might be sitting around and all of a sudden you start thinking about a loved one that's passed.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure that you realize that because of that, they're probably letting you know that they're with you.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone different places and heard the same song. I mean, I can be going in the car and I'll hear that song, and I'll go into a store and hear that same song, and I'll realize, okay, well, that's my mom trying to talk to me, because there was one particular song that my mother loved and I associated with her. And every time I hear it, I think of her. But the fact that you hear it in more than one place on the same day, you know, that's not a coincidence. That's got to be for a reason. And it's not a song that they play all the time either. So the fact that you hear it, it's like, wow. You know, so I'll be standing there in the grocery store and just stand there and say, hi, Mom. You know, are you trying to direct me to a sale? You know, that sort of thing. You know, I just take it in stride anymore. It's just like, okay. She's trying to talk to me.
So, Barbara, have you got some?
Well, I know people that will see a red bird or a red flower or a red-hearted balloon, which means something to them, at least. So there's all sorts of indications like that of special objects that meant something between the two people. Like I said, a certain bird or a flower or a feather, something along those lines.
I don't think I've had too many of them try to come back and communicate with me. At least I haven't been sensitive enough probably to realize it. Even though I hear noises sometimes around the house or
ghost kitties.
Yeah. Well, now, kitty cats is different. I've been in the bed before and all of a sudden feel a cat jump up on the bed and walk around. And I'll turn the light on. Ain't no cats around nowhere. So
you don't turn on the light. You reach over and you pet it.
No, I haven't had anything like that yet.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's like when Cat Cloco told us she was at a hotel that a ghost cat jumped up on her bed, and then she completely forgot to, like, reach out and pet it, which is the first thing I do when a cat jumps on a bed. It's like, oh, pet the kitty. And she's like, and then she realized, wait, there can't be a cat in my room. What the heck? You know, when she woke up. So,
yeah.
A bit late then.
And there's also people showing up in dreams.
Yes. They show up and you start thinking or you dream about them. Do they leave messages sometimes like that?
Supposedly.
Or just drop it here, you know?
I'm always surprised that if I come across my dad in my dreams that I don't say, aren't you like dead? You know, because it's been so long. It's what I call dream memory, where it plants false memories and makes you forget aspects of your waking state. And I always wonder, you know, how is it when I see my dad, I don't just say, ah, you shouldn't be here, or I must be dreaming. So.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think dreams are very suggestive, though. Let's face it, when you lose somebody and you really care about them, when you dream, sometimes the dreams don't make any sense because there are situations that you never would have been placed in along with these people. Or they're in situations that, you know, have really bothered you for some reason. You know, there are things that you never wanted to repeat in your life. So in more ways than one, I think a lot of times when people say that your loved ones are trying to talk to you from their dreams, I think a lot of that might be just wishful thinking on your own part. You just happen to be thinking a great deal about them. And it's usually around times of stress or around the time when they may have passed or during a particular holiday that you celebrated with them. I think a lot of that is more suggestive than not. Now, if your loved one were to come back and tell you where an old will was placed, now that's a different story. You know, coming back and saying, hey, I put the will under the floorboard. Now that would be, you know, you place a lot of stock in that one. That would be a cool thing to happen.
Here are those next week's lottery numbers.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, psychiatrists will tell you that everybody that you've ever seen in a dream is somebody that you actually know or have seen in real life. So, yeah, you're gonna put family, lost ones in your dreams because you have to have faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never
so
saw.
Essentially, they're NPCs.
Pretty much.
What about those who dreams of aliens?
Well, I guess you've seen aliens.
I haven't.
And then you'd have to wonder if the dream is in, you know, in color or just gray.
Hmm.
I never thought about that. I think most of my dreams have been, well, I don't know. I've had a few that are in color, but more often than not, they're like the Wizard of Oz, where they start out black and white and they end up color. Yeah. And then they go back to black and white. I don't know. There's supposedly a meaning for that. But I do dream like that sometimes, where they're just, you know, shades of gray or black and white, and then they go to color, and then suddenly they go back to black and white. Must be because I love The Wizard of Oz that I just figured that one out.
Same here. I love that film.
Yep.
No, by heart.
I never thought about that. I guess most of your dreams are in kind of like black and white.
I wonder if that has something to do with your perception, because your eyes are closed. So therefore, you're not looking at color through your eyelids. Oh, goodness. That's a deep subject. Never thought about that before.
I don't know about that. I mean, there are times when I start drowsing because I've been watching TV too late or something, and you get into that dream state, like it's almost dreaming before the eyes have started to close. And that's usually really vivid and very colorful.
Yeah, now, Patsy put in the chat room that I saw somebody one night that I thought was her, which I just seen a portion fixing to go down the stairs.
Like just a leg or something?
No, I've seen, you know, like just very quick of a person like going down the stairs, starting to go down the stairs, because once I started down, I couldn't see him anymore. But I hollered at her as she was, or whoever it was going down the stairs. And I, you know, I think I said, "What did you want?" or something like that. Anyway, I didn't get no answer. So I got up and went downstairs to see what she wanted. And she says, "No, it wasn't me. I've been down here cooking or something, doing something over in the kitchen." She says, "I haven't been upstairs." So I know I seen something. And whether who it was, I have no idea. So.
Well, at least she wasn't saying, "And by the way, where's the TV?"
Yeah. but I have heard her speaking before. Here in my computer room where I do the show from, I was in here doing something on the computer and had the door closed. And there's a hall bathroom just right straight across the hall. And I heard her say, "Well, there you are, little girl," which was talking about our little cat. And I said something and figured she didn't hear me. I got up, went, opened the door and looked, and there wasn't nobody there. So I went downstairs looking for her. And she says, "No, I've been downstairs the whole time," but it's plain as day. And I remember exactly what she said. "There you are, little girl." And I thought she was talking about our little girl cat. So now, whatever that means, I have no idea. Never thought about it being family or somebody that I know, or if it was just a spirit.
Or she was astral projecting and didn't realize it, or partially astral projecting.
Never thought of that.
Or, of course, you've just got doppelgangers. You know, you can spray for that.
You can spray for it. So, Barbara, have you ever had any incidents, anything like that? You've never seen anything?
Define.
Yeah. What? Huh?
From family? What?
What?
Let's.
I live. You know, to me, it's just like, okay, you're there. All right, whatever. I don't even take count of it.
But you have heard things or seen things.
But to me, it's just like big deal. I mean,
right?
Yeah,
It just is. I mean, I'm like, you know, probably like Cat. You know, you just get used to it.
Yeah. After a while, it's like, okay, yeah,
you're there,
right.
Whatever.
One of those, you know, you don't see that every day.
Really.
When I was back east, I was doing a temp assignment in Parsippany, and my supervisor, I don't know how it came up that I study all this, but she indicated that there was a time when she had one of those 3 a.m. paper routes, and she was delivering at the home of a friend of hers that she didn't realize was in the hospital, and she was putting the newspaper into the little mailbox. And she turns, and her friend is standing right there. It's like, oh, and, you know, before she could even say anything, the person was gone. And she's like, okay. And then she later found out that her friend had died at the hospital like moments before.
Wow.
Now we had a guy that did a show from Australia. I think his name was Rusty, and Marla can probably clarify whatever it was. I don't know if Barbara remembers Rusty. Him. Yeah. Do you remember him?
Haven't we had Rusty on? Sounds familiar.
Rusty used to have a show too on
That's
here.
That's probably why I remember him. Okay.
And he had a friend, I believe it was, or was it a family member?
It's always nice to have friends.
Well, anyway, the friend come and was talking to him. The only problem was he found out that that friend had been dead about 2 or 3 hours. So he just wanted to come, I'm sure, and talk to him and tell him bye, kind of. But he said he found out that the friend had been dead. You remember that, Barbara?
I don't remember that instance, but Rusty had quite a few experiences, I think.
Yes, he did. Pretty interesting, though. You get is when people come to let you know, kind of like goodbye type thing. I'm okay, blah blah blah, and then find out that they'd already passed.
Yeah.
Rusty O'Neill. That's who it was. And it was a good show. He had some problems, and that's why he had to stop doing the show. I guess medical problems.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Well, at least he can do his show for another 2 hours. But no.
But anyway, so before I let Kat do some other talking here, I just want to remind everybody tomorrow is Father's Day, and everybody wish their fathers a happy Father's Day if they're still here. If they're not, I'm sure that you'll be thinking about them. So I hope everybody has a great Father's Day in remembering your fathers here or past. So enjoy that. And I want, Kat, you was telling us, I guess before I let you do this, is there anything else you got, Barbara or Jeff, you wanted to jump in and say?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. You were saying that since you've been running around with these guys called the Ghost Pit, and I don't know what you guys been doing. But you were saying that a lot of new things is taking place other than using the ghost meters and all that stuff. What else, some of the events that has been going on?
Well, since I've been with them, I feel extremely comfortable with them. They are an absolutely fantastic group of people. They don't take anything, at face value. They are the kind of investigators and people that look at everything with a point of view that, okay, is there a logical explanation for it? They don't immediately jump at the first thing that happens. And they have allowed me, as a sensitive, to open my own abilities more in a location than I have with most other people. And because of that, I have expanded my own abilities to not only be able to pick up on spirits in a location, but I'm also now able to pick up on spirits that might be around a particular person, a live person, in other words. So I've been able to pick up on people that might be wanting to talk to someone that's with us or one of the members of the group. And that has just been extremely moving and profound for me because I never considered myself to be a medium at all. I've often told people that I really don't want to be. I've been asked if I would like to develop my skills to become a medium, and I don't really want to do that for a couple of reasons, but mostly because I don't really like the responsibility that a medium does have to make sure that everything that comes through is accurate. I mean, because let's face it, it's a hit and miss sometimes when you tell people that there's somebody around you or that you've got a message from someone. You're hoping that you're right. You're hoping that it's accurate. And you hope that whatever happens, that they take it the right way. You know, you have to be careful about who you tell that somebody's around them. And some of the things that have happened to me being with the pit, as we refer to ourselves as the pit, have been extremely moving and very profound, especially some of the private home investigations that we've gone to. Picking up on the things that people have been experiencing in their home and then realizing who they are and then trying to explain to them who I feel that they are and then getting validation from them. Yes, okay, these details are accurate. These are correct, or this is what's been happening. So I've been coming away from all of these investigations with a greater sense of my own abilities and the responsibility that comes along with it. Even though prior to this, I used to go into a location with everything gadgets, you know, the K2 meter, the EMF detector, go into a location and yep, it's beep, it's going off, beep, it's going off. Okay, there must be a spirit here. And I've had to rely on my abilities second. Well, now I'm using my abilities first. And if the EMF detector happens to go off, you know, at the same time that I pick up on something, great. K2 does it, great. If the SLS unit picks up something, great. The fact that they're willing to accept my abilities for what they are has just been an amazing experience for me. I mean, everybody that I've investigated with for many years, you know, you, Henry, Kat, Pat, Craig, anybody and everybody that I've investigated with, you've all accepted what I do as a sensitive. But the people in the pit, because I'm so much closer to them and have done more experiences with them, it's helped me to develop not only as a person, you know, as a sensitive, but also as an investigator. And it's given me a whole new appreciation for things, you know, from the afterlife. A couple of the experiences that I had, one of them is described in my book, was The Unexpected Guest. And that was the little boy that followed me home from a location that I had investigated with prior to the pit. And this little boy came home with me. Well, the ghost pit, we went back to that same location a few months back. And this is the first time they had ever been there. But I knew pretty much what to expect. But we're in this location, and we immediately had a bookshelf to open up on us. It was a doorway, but it actually opened up on us right in front of us. And we're hearing noises, and I immediately knew that the little boy was there. The SLS unit picked him up, and he interacted with us. Well, it was really hilarious. I'm telling this little boy, while we were there, you know, you probably recognize me. You came home with me a few years back, and you're not going to do that tonight. I'm letting you know right now, you cannot come home with anybody. You're just stay put. You know, nobody's going to allow you to come home with them. Well, Brian left a voice recorder in another room, and we had gone to another area where we had set up our initial equipment, and he had left the voice recorder going. Well, then he realized, well, he had left that voice recorder going, but just prior to him going to get that recorder, we were talking, and I said, you know, that little boy, you know, I hope he doesn't come home with us, you know, because I, you know, you're not going to put up with it. He can be a destructive little hoosits, you know. So Brian went to get the recorder, brought it back. He noticed that the thing had gone off, meaning that it picked up something. It not only gave off a really weird sigh, something, but you can hear us talking in the other room. You can just barely hear our voices muffled. But then right after, you could barely hear me talk about this little boy where you can't follow us. As plain as day, in that recorder, a little boy's voice said, "Are you scolding me?" And Brian jumped with a big grin all over his face, and he said, "You're kidding." And he played it back like two or three times, very distinct. "Are you scolding me?" And so to him, it was like, wow, you know, this oh, wow moment. Me, I'm just standing there going, okay, all right. You know, this was typical for me. You know, I knew the little boy was there, you know, but, you know, seeing the expression on everybody else's face, that it was validation that I knew that kid was there, and he talked, he spoke to us, and he interacted with what we said. It's just absolutely phenomenal. And so, you know, some of the experiences with them, it's just been fantastic. I couldn't be happier.
Well, good. Where's some of the places that you guys got lined up to go to now?
Well, right now we have been doing public investigations at the Brunswick, Maryland Railroad and Heritage Museum. We have been doing public investigations at the Capitol Theater in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. We've done some private home investigations. We're supposed to be going on one very soon. We just recently spent a weekend in Wilkes-Barre doing some investigations there. And in October, we have an event that is going to be hosted by the Capitol Theater and the psychic medium William Stillman for the Halloween weekend. And it will be called Spirits Through Time, a Chambersburg, Pennsylvania Paranormal Fair. And it will host all kinds of speakers, vendors, and we will also host, the Ghost Pit will host an investigation that one night. And then William Stillman will be doing his gallery that same weekend. So it's a culmination of a lot of things, but the Ghost Pit, you know, we've got our fingers in various different things, but, you know, it's just a phenomenal team. I can't say enough. And our youngest, her name is Miley. I call her Squirt. And she takes some of the most incredible photographs. And it's an unconscious. She just takes her photo, you know, her camera, and just starts snapping pictures. And some of the stuff she's gotten makes your jaw drop. So... But that's pretty much what's going on with us right now. You know, we've got other things lined up. I think Brian's got some things that we're getting ready to do. So, keeping us busy.
So, is the investigation on a Saturday night?
It is going to be, yes, on that Saturday night. Let me see. I think after the fair is over with, then I think that's the way it's supposed to be, or it might be that Sunday. It might be that Sunday. I think Bill Stillman's gallery is that Saturday. We haven't completely worked out all of the kinks, so there's a few things to work out.
So it wouldn't do me any much good to come over there because I'd be having to do the show.
Well, you could do the show live right there from the Capitol Theater.
I could, huh?
Oh, most definitely. We've already talked to the general manager about it, and he said, oh, yeah, bring it on.
And what's the date?
October 26th and 27th, the weekend before Halloween.
I'll have to look and see what I've got going on. who knows? But I'll keep it in mind, and we can talk about it later. So.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, would love to have you, Henry.
I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight on such a short notice.
Oh, you're most welcome. I always enjoy talking to everybody.
Barbara, Jeff, you guys got anything real quick like that you want to...
I was just trying to do some quick research on Ghost Pit. Now, you indicated that the Chambersburg Community Theater, you've investigated before, I found out. And that's what's upcoming? Your upcoming investigation is going back there?
Well, the Capitol Theater in Chambersburg, it's an historic theater built in 1926. Mm-hmm. And it currently still hosts a number of different shows, plays, musicals. All for the next few months, they're going to be doing Wednesday night old movies. And the Ghost Pit is also going to be holding a meet and greet prior to the showing of the original Ghostbusters in August. So we'll hold a meet and greet before then watch the Ghostbusters. But the Capitol Theater, they have a ballet studio there, the Chambersburg Orchestra, the Chambersburg Ballet. All those people are there. It's just a fantastically beautiful historic building and nicely haunted.
Woo-hoo. Wow. Well, we are down to about 4 minutes. I will tell you who we got next week. We got Kayla Ambrose, author, is going to be on with her book Awakening of the Spirit. So you might want to tune in next week. Great little book, and ought to be a very interesting show. She's been on before. It's been, a few years since we've had her on. But we've got her back on. And we've got a lot of good guests lined up that's going to be coming on. The week after that, we have a guest on called Jeff Wilson, and he's got some books that he's written about Ohio. And it's not necessarily all paranormal, but it's very interesting in facts, and some of it does have some ghosts in it, but it'll be very interesting. So we've got things lined up. So we're down to like 2 minutes. Anything else you guys want to shout out before we jump off? Barbara? No? Okay, then. I guess, Jeff, you can give out all of our stuff then.
Yeah, our official website is theparanormalview.com. You can go to facebook.com/theparanormalview, all one word. And I try and write up synopsis of each show. And that's on podomatic.com. Look for The Paranormal View. And you can follow me on Instagram and certainly on Twitter. At my username is @RealBadger. And I'm also, of course, on Facebook, GEOFFREY.GOULD.
And all right. Thank you, Kat Cash, for being on the show.
Yay. Absolutely.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So what would you think about us trying to do Moundsville?
Ooh. As opposed to Snickersville, or what do you...
As opposed to Gettysburg.
Oh.
Would love to go to Moundsville.
Where is that?
It's in
West Virginia.
Yeah, it's in West Virginia. It's not too awful far away for me. It's a lot closer. So we'll talk about that, see what prices there are. I understand it is a very, very active place.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do that. We'll talk about that instead of Gettysburg and see what's going on, how many people would want to go. I'm sure a lot of people would like to go there. So we'll see what's going on. Till then, this is Henry Foister.
Jeffrey Gould.
And we will see you next week at the same time. So good night, everybody.
Night.
You've been listening to the paranormal view.